From London, it's the Wired.co.uk podcast, episode 3 for Friday, November 19th, 2010. On the show today, we're going to determine once and for all whether streaming music services like Spotify are rubbish and should go away, whether making jokes about blowing up airports on Twitter should be a criminal offence, and we'll learn about an American car dealership that's giving away AK-47s. All that and more coming up. I'm Nate Langson, and I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk, and joining me this week on a rainy London day is our senior staff writer, Duncan Gear.
Good afternoon.
And our news editor, Olivia Solon.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well.
Good, thank you.
Good. Yeah. I'm particularly happier this week than we were last week because we've hijacked Easy Living's room, which is why the sound quality is about 1,000 times better than last week. Might not be perfect.
Hopefully, touch wood.
But yeah. It's Nick Nakarama in here. The walls are lined with various...
With knickknacks, packets of knickknacks everywhere.
No, I mean, I can see teacups, I can see Little Miss books, I can see condiments, wine, light shades.
I want to know what's in some of those jars down there. That looks like absinthe.
Do you want to have a look?
No. If it's absinthe, then we'll end up drinking. Anyway, so first on our agenda today is the fact that we have a new website, and with it, we have a podcast.
Woo!
Do you guys know what podcasts are? Have you ever heard one?
No.
They're really good. It's like a radio show you can download, and we've just started one.
Wow. It sounds like the future.
It sounds like the future right now. So we have a new website, wired.co.uk, and we've been working on this for several months, and it's finally live. We've got a few new features on it, but to be honest, the best thing you can do is go and have a poke around it. We've got some massive HD image galleries. Obviously, we've got a podcast, which you're listening to. We've got better video support, better fonts.
Image
topics.
Galleries, have you done that one?
We did that first.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
You do events?
We have an event section, yeah. So if you have an event you're going to or that you want to go to, or better still, if you don't know of an event you might want to go to, then go to the events section and look one up. And basically anything you know about, you can go and submit it and browse around for things that you might want to do in the UK and Europe. It's pretty cool. I like it.
Topic hubs.
Awesome.
Topic hubs, yeah. Homepages for all the most popular topics on Wired. Including one for cats. That comes as no surprise to anyone. Least of all me, since I put that one in. And we're pretty happy with it. I don't know if Liv is. Are you happy with it?
I am. It's looking really good. I think the kind of design's really nice and clean as well. It doesn't feel as... It feels like it's brought straight into the future it's been taken.
What is your one favourite thing about the new site?
I really like the photo galleries. I think that makes a huge, huge difference.
A 1080p huge
and the
difference.
A 1080p.
1280, actually.
Oh,
yeah, it's 1280. And it's not even P, because P means progressive, and there's only one frame, so it's 1280.
Big photos is basically what we're talking
about. Massive photos. And the comment facility is different, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, people can reply to each other's comments now. So
and they're threaded.
They are threaded and vote enabled.
What's your one favourite thing?
My one favourite thing.
Is it the cat hub?
The cat's hub.
It could be the cats, yeah. I'm a big fan of cats. I think cats are the greatest things in the world.
What about yours, Duncan?
I don't really, by the way.
My one favourite thing is probably the podcast.
Oh.
Or maybe I'm just sucking up to the listeners.
Anyway, next up in news is that the Beatles have finally come to iTunes after, 7-8 years of iTunes being in existence. And Duncan, I'm curious because I've had all the Beatles albums on several formats, and why would I go to iTunes and pay $10.99 for Help when I've had it on vinyl, cassette, and now CD?
That is probably a question that an awful lot of people are asking themselves right at this moment. I mean, this is obviously a coup for Steve Jobs, but the bigger question is, does anybody else really care? Everybody's been listening to the Beatles for the last 10 years. You know, it's not like we've been deprived of their music. It just has been that they haven't been available on, you know, download services. I don't think we've been missing particularly that much. You know, you can still listen to CDs. You can still listen to vinyl, mono vinyl.
Do you think that maybe the advantage of it being a new generation of music buyers may now want to buy the Beatles for the first time and go to iTunes in order to do that? Because the Beatles now have risen right up the charts in iTunes. And iTunes being, I think, the biggest music retailer in the world now. To be number one in iTunes or even in the top 100 is pretty impressive.
I don't know. I feel like there isn't a single person out there in the world who's saying, I really want to listen to some Beatles, but I just can't buy it on iTunes, you know? Even if they don't want to get up from their computers, they're just going to torrent it.
Liv, are you excited about buying The White Album for $17.99?
No, not particularly. I've got a lot of the Beatles albums on CD, and again, if I needed to get hold of it, iTunes certainly wouldn't be my first point of call. I think now for people who can't be asked to go to the shop, or perhaps they've only got an iTunes subscription, they don't necessarily like to download things and the fringes of legality, then perhaps this is going to add a bit more kind of, like, discoverability is the wrong word, because I don't think people are discovering the Beatles, but you know what I mean, it's accessibility. Yeah. And that will obviously drive huge amounts of sales.
I think one of the most interesting things about it being on iTunes is the fact that you can download songs individually, which I'm surprised at, because a lot of
big bands...
I'm surprised
they compromised on that.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of big bands have said, we want our albums to be an experience.
Particularly Pink Floyd, one of the most notable.
They wanted their albums to be a complete art piece of work. And I agree, an album is a complete piece of work. And particularly for bands like, Pink Floyd, who has a lot of concept albums and things like that, where it's telling a story and things like that, I can sort of understand the sort of pretentious nature of saying, we want our albums to be heard in full and only in full and only in, quadraphonic sound in a perfectly silenced anechoic chamber in a huge chair or something.
But perhaps if there'd been a kind of democratic vote between all members of the Beatles, that might not have been the case, but obviously there's a kind of sweeping majority from just a couple of members.
I don't know, I feel like philosophically... It's not the artist's music necessarily. It's also the listener's music. It's the music that they are listening to. And they should have absolutely every right to listen to it in whatever way they want to. If they want to listen to it in chunks.
And they can just, they'll rip it and then make their own playlist anyway. So it's not exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to decide whether or not we're actually en masse in agreeance of Beatles being on iTunes. I think we are.
Yeah, broadly.
Yeah. I just don't think it's as big as news as it's been made out to be.
I think the biggest news here is the fact that the Beatles are available digitally as a download for the first time. I think it doesn't matter that it's iTunes, it could be anyone. Yeah.
My favourite thing about the whole news story was Ringo Starr's quote on the press release.
Oh yeah, it was, now can you all shut up asking about the Beatles being on iTunes, because we now are.
Yeah, it was like I'm excited to be able to announce that people will no longer ask me when the Beatles are going to be on iTunes.
It was very sort of backhanded. Well, let us know if you've bought the Beatles on iTunes for the first time. Genuinely, I'm interested, I think we all are, in finding out, what would drive someone to download it off iTunes when they could have bought the CDs, years ago.
Or downloaded a torrent.
Murky water, I don't know. I don't think could... The wrath of deviants. I'm kidding, of course, people, I'm kidding. But do drop us an email, podcast@wired.co.uk. Let us know what you think, and we can read some out next week on the next show. Next up is that a few months ago, was it last year, there was a guy...
January
this year, Paul Chambers, who was, I think, a bit pissed off at an airport.
A bit miffed.
Or something, and Liv... Talk me through this.
Yeah, so he sent this message. The exact message was, crap, Robin Hood Airport is closed. You've got a week and a bit to get your shit together, otherwise I'm blowing the airport sky high. This is a guy who was trying to get home to see his girlfriend. He couldn't make it. Jokey message sent out to his friends on Twitter. And then in May, a few months later, he was found guilty of sending a menacing electronic communication and was given a fine, which he then tried to appeal against. It was £385. And he's just lost this appeal and has to pay a £3,000 bill in fines and legal fees. Now, I think, again, this is a pretty ridiculous case where someone said something and it's been taken... very literally, it's akin to saying I could eat a horse and someone saying, oh, you're about to commit animal cruelty.
Yeah, or walking into a restaurant and someone putting an actual full-size horse in front of you and a knife and fork.
Or, my boss is really annoying me, I'm going to punch him in the balls. I don't think that's a threatening GBH or ABH. So I don't know, it's just one of those cases. I think the best thing about it was that there was a rally round this guy on Twitter of a whole load of people retweeting his message.
Almost everyone. I haven't seen anybody.
Almost everyone. It was, they attached the hashtag I am Spartacus,
which became the number one hashtag in the UK.
Yeah, and I think that was a brilliant show.
I think second in the world.
Was it second in the world?
I think so.
I imagine Justin Bieber was number
one. I also think people have came together to raise the funds to pay off this ridiculous fine. I think that's... hopefully that won't, this case won't set a precedent for any future.
I mean, the interesting thing for me is that he wasn't tried under any kind of terror legislation whatsoever.
No. Which is for the best.
It was under an obscure part of an act in the 30s that was about malicious phone calls, originally, is why it was enacted.
When we didn't have the internet or Twitter.
But also, the hilarious thing is, can you imagine any potential bomber actually being en route to commit this deed and actually
tweeting about it,
140 characters about them going to blow up the airport.
I think it would have been less serious.
By the way, I'm not going to blow up any airports. Just anyone out there.
Charlie Brooker had a great comment on The Guardian earlier this week, who said as soon as he's finished writing this article, he's going to go around and strangle everyone in the world. And it just kind of just underscores how ridiculous it would be to actually assume that Charlie Brooker is about to leave The Guardian's office in wherever they are.
King's Cross,
yeah. And go and strangle people. I don't know, it's ridiculous. Stephen Fry stepped up and said, I will pay your fine. Whatever they bill you, I will pay it.
I think he's talking about a further appeal, taking it the next level up. I think that's smart.
I think it's amazing. I really think that the...
good on him for fighting it.
Definitely. The support that, you know, the Twitter community and anyone who says twimmunity, I'm going to kick out of this room because, no. It's just amazing. It's some great support. It's a stupid story, but I don't know. Duncan. Girl talk. Tell me about girl talk.
Do you want me to talk to you like a girl?
No, not again. It was awkward last time. I didn't want to be around you for a day after that. Tell me about this album that's been released.
Yeah, there's a guy called Greg Gillis, who has for years been... he's kind of a mashup artist. He gets music from all kinds of different genres, from metal, from hip-hop, from pop, from new romanticism, absolutely anything you can possibly imagine, and mashes it all up, kind of 30-second clips of each, into an album. He's just put out his new album. It's free to download because he obviously hasn't cleared any of these samples. You can get your hold on, you can get your hands on it now. It's called All Day. If you search for All Day Girl Talk, you should be able to find it. It's really good.
This reminds me of those guys, Cassette Boy. Have you heard those guys?
Yeah.
Who do the sort of mashups of different songs to make it say weird
too
things.
Too many DJs.
Yeah, it's amazing. In fact, there's a great new one that's just come out for Dragon's Den. You should go and have a look at it on YouTube. Dragon's Den Cassette Boy, absolutely hilarious. Anyway, I mean, you've heard this, Duncan. Is it any good? I mean,
well, it's kind of an adventure to listen to. Mm-hmm. You kind of spend your entire time, because he'll take an intro from here, a chorus from here, a vocal line from a rap track over the top of it. He'll speed bits up, slow bits down. It's cut about incredibly well. Far more than, you know, traditional mashup artists who've maybe combined two or three songs together over the course of 4 minutes. This is like three or four songs every 30 seconds. It's a musical Trainspotter's wet dream, because you're constantly like, oh my God, what's that little intro bit? I know that. What is it?
So if you've ever seen him live in concert, you'll see that he's a kind of geek girl's favourite, and he tends to be quite a sweaty man, top off, with his little laptop playing to the crowd.
The girls like that, sweaty man with a
top
off.
Well, apparently so. Check it out. He's a girl magnet.
Not selling it to me.
No.
But best of all, though, he's put it all out, because, as I say, he hasn't cleared any of the rights whatsoever. So he's put it out under a Creative Commons license, an attribution non-commercial license.
That's very good of him. Yeah. To take other people's work and then say,
Give it away.
I don't want to charge for it, it's fine.
Well, I don't know. I think you can argue that what he's created is an entirely new art piece on its
own. I agree.
And interestingly, nobody's ever taken him to court.
Mm. Anyway, on that note, let's move on to our feature. So this week, our feature on the topic of music is whether or not Spotify and streaming music services are actually any good. I've been sort of a holdout on the whole Spotify thing, simply because the model of Spotify, to pay something every month to stream music but never own it, feels too much like rental for me. I don't like renting music. I buy CDs. I don't download anything. I like the high quality and the artwork and stuff like that. But Duncan and I have always had this kind of argument. I mean, Duncan, I think you would marry Spotify, wouldn't you? If Spotify was a girl, I think
Spotify
you would.
Or Android?
Yeah, Spotify or Android. And the fact
I'd
that Android,
cheat on Android with Spotify.
I hear a threesome coming up.
I was going to say, you can get Spotify on Android, can't you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a horrible kind of worms. I don't want to open that can. I mean, Duncan, why don't you give us a bit of background just quickly about what Spotify is and how it differs from things like iTunes, because it's got massively popular over in Europe at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know kind of how many non-European listeners we have. I hope there's at least a few. Hello, if you're not from Europe, you should drop us a message and tell us where you are. Spotify, if you're not aware, is a streaming music service. It's a program that you run on your computer, and it opens up. You can search for a song. It has a database of about 10 million tracks. You double-click them, and they play.
And it's free for some people for a certain amount of time a month, isn't it? And then you can pay to get unlimited access without ads.
Yeah, that's kind of right. There's a free option which limits you to a certain amount of listening. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Something like 20 hours a month, I think.
Something like that. Yeah. If you get invited by a current user, then you can get unlimited free listening. The free listening, though, is supported by ads. So every four or five songs, it kind of differs depending on how many ads they've sold, you'll get an audio ad played that can be 10 seconds, it can be 30 seconds, it can be innocuous, it can be incredibly annoying.
It seems to be Nike Grid at the moment.
It's a bit like commercial radio in that sense.
I don't know. I feel like it's a bit less, a little bit less intrusive than commercial radio. And also, you get to pick the music.
It would annoy you.
Pause it, and you know, you can do really cool stuff with it. My favorite thing about Spotify isn't really the kind of access to all the millions of things. It's the being able to so easily put songs into playlists and share them with other people. That's what I like about it the most, the shareability. Yeah. And the fact that they've put that shareability into a legal model.
Yeah, and I
that
think
pays the artists.
And this is the next big point, really, is that I think that, you know, several years ago, a service like this wouldn't necessarily get the support of the major labels. You know, basically a program where you can listen completely for free and just supported by advertising, which we'll come to later, doesn't make massive amounts of money compared to sales. But it's really as an alternative, a legal alternative to the illegal download market. And it's really, really picked up in terms of popularity with
I should kids. Probably talk about what the premium bits do. If you pay, then yes, you get unlimited streaming for however long you want in whatever countries you want. You get access on mobile phones. You can sync tracks to offline so that you can listen to them on the tube or whenever you're out of phone signal. You get a much higher audio quality and no advertising.
Mm. That's a good ad. We should start charging Spotify for promotion on our podcast. And so obviously the big difference here between Spotify and iTunes or, say, Napster or something like that, although Napster's a bit of a different game, but certainly the big difference between iTunes is that with iTunes you pay a fee, 79p for a song or, you know, 7-8 quid for an album, and you download it, and think of it as what you will, you get to keep that copy forever. You know, you can, if you only keep an iPod for the rest of your life and you only have that song on it, you can listen to that song for the rest of your life. Whereas with Spotify, and this is where my problem with it comes in, is you're paying every month like you would pay to rent a flat as opposed to, say, a mortgage or something on a house you own. And if you stop paying, you lose all that music. You know, it'll disappear from your phone, it'll disappear from your computer, you cannot listen to it anymore. And so for me, it feels like, how can that be the future when you're not actually owning music? I want to own music. When I pay money, I want to keep it.
I think it's a bit of a kind of weird argument, this kind of ownership versus subscription model, because owning a digital download is not the same as owning a CD or some kind of box set where you get the kind of cover artwork, etc. It's kind of a digital file that doesn't have this, it's not the kind of tangible ownership that we're used to. And I think, as with other services, we're seeing everything move into a kind of cloud computing, and it only makes sense that you kind of do own all of this music and you just pay a kind of maintenance contract to access it on a monthly basis.
But I think you have to redefine what ownership is when you're talking about the difference between something that is a tangible object that you can keep and lock in a safe and something that you simply always have access to and no one can take it away. Because you own, although it might just be bits on a disc, you still own those bits on a disc. No one can take that away just because you stop paying for it. You pay to keep that file, whatever it may be, forever.
But if you stop paying for your house, then the space to store your CDs will be taken away. And in that way, ownership is just, you know, you've got to store it somewhere.
But that's the difference, and that was what I was hinting at earlier, which is, you know, at the moment I rent my flat, so if I stop paying my flat, I get evicted.
Yeah, and you'd have nowhere to put your CDs.
That's right, but I still own those CDs. Even if I lived in the street on a on the street in a box, I would probably just live in a house built out of CDs. I have that many. Like, I spend a stupid amount of money on them. But the difference is if I had money and bought a flat, if I bought the flat, no one can take that away from me. I'm not paying any rent if I bought it outright. That's my house.
I think the real problem with ownership of music and other sort of, you know, creative goods is the format problem. You know, over the last 50, 60 years, we've been through 4-5 different formats of music.
And the rest. Yeah. I mean, look at the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you've got to, kind of got to ask yourself the question, how long are MP3s going to stick about? You know, if you're buying all this stuff in MP3 right now, are you going to be able to convert it later? I'm almost certain that you will do, but there will come a point where the music format changes so drastically that it's kind of difficult to do, and you start losing your collection because it's antiquated. I mean, what I think is really interesting is that public libraries are kind of a lot like Spotify.
Except that you don't have to pay.
Well, yeah. Sometimes there's like a nominal fee or whatever for joining because it's supported by the government. I'm interested in the question, why are books supported by the government and why isn't music? Why isn't film? Why aren't there libraries for these things? And sure, you can get some of these things in public libraries.
You can, but I mean, libraries do have CDs. You know, they do have DVDs and I don't know if they have games, but I mean, books are a bit different because books are in, you know, the educational curriculums. They're in books.
The same can apply.
That's kind of
music.
A rubbish argument.
But also, let's not forget.
I'm not saying it's a good one.
I actually don't pay for Spotify. I don't have a premium subscription, so it is free for me. I have to listen to advertising, but I don't mind.
Does it bother you?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, I think I obviously have all my own music uploaded there as well, but we're so used to having ads everywhere, so why does it matter having ads within in Spotify?
Well, I mean,
if I'm not paying for it, someone's got to pay for it, and if Nike's prepared to pay for it, then I'm happy with that.
The ads were annoying me, and I wanted mobile phone access, so I pay for premium, and it's £10 a month, and I just feel like I would be spending, if Spotify wasn't around, I would be spending more than £10 a month on music.
Yeah.
Because it is around, I'm not. I'm saving money.
But you'd
I'm
also be able
access to
keep
far
that music.
More music. Yeah, but it doesn't bother me that I'm going to lose access to it one day, because there will it will always be grabbable from some other way.
And
you know, I've got £10 worth of value just within that month of that music.
I think that's the best argument, really, of the whole thing, is that you're aware that it's essentially rental, and you're happy with that.
Yeah.
And this was one of the problems. I remember having a conversation with someone I used to work with about Napster. She was paying however much it was to download her music, and that was a little bit different because you were downloading files then, as opposed to just streaming it.
Yeah.
And she was paying, I don't know, £10 a month or something for these downloads every month. She was like, "It's amazing. Why do you buy CDs? Why don't you just use Napster? I download all this." And I said to her, "Well, because if you stop paying, that music's going to vanish from your MP3 player."
Yeah.
She's like, "What?" She didn't know. She had no idea that what she was actually doing.
Well, that's bad DRM.
But also, hang on, but regardless of whether, you know, we're owning or we're subscribing to music, what about how the music eventually gets to the artists?
Well,
how much money are the artists getting? I mean, someone's getting screwed over somewhere along the line.
I have a song on Spotify and on iTunes, and I make about 50p every single time someone downloads one of my songs from iTunes or Amazon.
How many times has someone downloaded it?
I do not give out this information. But maybe you can go and download it and give me some money.
What's it called?
That's another story for another day. But you can search for my name. But anyway, the thing is, my stream's from Spotify, and I know that a whole lot of people have streamed stuff from Spotify. The amount of money you get from that is pitiful. They're still taking my music, and they're not. I don't care if they're gone pirate it. You know, email me, I'll send you the FLAC 96 kilohertz copy of it. I don't care. But you know what I mean? The people are making much less money on Spotify, and I know that because I do. And I know that people listen to it more on Spotify than they do on iTunes.
But putting yourself in the mind of a listener for a second, do you feel like if you got a song off iTunes and you listened to it maybe 2 or 3 times, decided, yeah, that was good, but you're listening to something else now, 2 or 3 plays of a song, 99p, is that a good deal? 79p, is that a good deal?
I'd say it's better than Spotify, which is like 0.
That's a really bad deal for a listener.
How much does Spotify play per stream? It's like 0.000.
Pay per stream, I've got that somewhere.
Yeah. Duncan's giant list of figures.
The record label revenue for our one stream on Spotify is 0.0017 cents. No, dollars. Wow. So that will be 0.1 cents. 0.17 cents. And the musician's share of that is about 15% compared to on iTunes. Oh no, iTunes is also 15%.
Wow. So I'm not going to keep myself in diamond slippers and golden wallets with that.
Those stats come from a guy called David McCandless, who does all the Information is Beautiful visualization stuff. They're really good. You should check them out. He compared lots and lots and lots of different ways for artists to make money, and then totaled up how many sales or streams or whatever, downloads of each thing, that artist needed to earn the US minimum wage, which is £1,160 per month. Mm. Spotify was last on the list with 4,549,020 streams for an artist to make minimum wage just from Spotify streams.
Could you not just set it on repeat? Hang about, why don't I do that? Why don't I just set my song to... Can you do that? Can you just set my song on repeat and pay me?
I think that might be fraud.
I think it's fraud. It does sound like fraud, doesn't it?
That's fraud on online advertising when they do that, so imagine it's... Mm.
Do you want to know what's on the top of the list? The best way for solo musicians to make money?
Gig.
No, gigs aren't included. This is just recordings.
Selling,
charging £50 and then holding people at gunpoint and saying, "Buy this, I'm going to make you eat your beard."
Watch out, you might get arrested.
Oh yeah, I didn't do it on Twitter. It's fine.
Basically, the best way, according to David McCandless, of artists making money, or the most lucrative per unit, is self-pressed CDs.
Really?
Yeah, because you make about 81% after you've, you know, taking out your costs and everything.
Distribution's a bit of a pain.
Distribution is a pain.
Plus the cost of a stamp. I mean, is that £9 now for it to post something
in
my Royal
Mail?
I think
sort of stamps and postage and stuff like that was all, you know, wrapped into that. The fact that that costs 19% of the...
Oh, stamps. I'm imagining, standing around, handing them out in the street.
Then it's cheaper.
Again, yeah.
And you need to sell just 143 self-pressed CDs. To make minimum wage as an artist in the US.
Wow.
Assuming you're selling them for $10.
And here we are doing a podcast.
Next up, if you want me to run down a little bit, CD Baby, Napster, and then iTunes. iTunes is fourth.
Fourth? Well, there's some fascinating figures, Duncan. Fascinating figures.
That's an album download on iTunes, by the way, rather than a single MP3 download.
I see. So I think what we can conclude here is don't use Spotify and instead... Print your own CDs.
And sell them on the street.
And the future is renting music.
Have we got time to do the one last thing you said under the Spotify thing? What would make them more attractive?
Let's do that.
Yeah?
What would make Spotify more attractive to someone who would self-confess marry them?
Lower licensing rates from labels. That is the biggest thing that is stopping the proliferation of download stores at the moment. The fact that it costs so much for digital music services to license music from labels. If... that those rates were reduced, you'd see an absolute explosion in digital music and probably a crash in CDs, but it would more than make up for it. And you would also see a massive erosion of piracy.
I see something here as a topic for future discussion. Should we get rid of the record labels?
I think it's just about they're fundamentally shifting their business models and they're built on a legacy system that is no longer relevant, and it's about completely transforming the record labels.
Lily Allen, who's no fan of piracy, as many people know, isn't a big fan of labels either. She pointed out that labels are actually who charge artists for their advertising, which is pretty much standard practice in record contracts, are kind of putting money in their own pockets because they own part of Spotify. So they're charging the artist to put the songs on, to put their adverts on Spotify, and then they're making that ad revenue back.
And on that note, let's decide whether streaming music is wired or tired. Duncan?
Wired.
Liv?
Wired.
I'm going to go tired, but that means I'm outvoted. So, streaming music is wired, it's the future of music and all that. I'll stick to my CDs, thank you very much. And on that note, we move on to our quick bites. A used car dealership in the US is offering free AK-47 rifles with every truck purchased as part of a promotion. Nation's Trucks promises to pay for a Soviet-style assault rifle for anyone who buys one of its used vehicles. Sales of the trucks have more than doubled since the start of the deal, according to the company's general manager.
A newly described lizard species from Vietnam has demonstrated that it's possible for vertebrate animals to reproduce asexually, with females giving birth to offspring without mating. Even odder, the scientists who made the discovery suspect that the lizards are actually hybrids of two other species and, rather than being sterile like most hybrids, evolved the ability to develop offspring without requiring fertilisation and from a male.
And in this week's cat news, a high-speed video has revealed the strange technique and delicate balance of physical forces that cats use to lap milk from a bowl. Unlike dogs who use their tongues as ladles to scoop water into their jaws, cats pull columns of liquid up to their mouths using only the very tips of their tongues. Cats are just smarter than dogs from the point of view of fluid mechanics, said civil engineer Roman Stocker of MIT. And on that cat-related note, we say goodbye. And please do check out the new wire.co.uk. We think it looks pretty sexy and hope you agree. You can send us feedback on the podcast at podcast@wire.co.uk. Follow us on Twitter at WiredUK. And just to be different, on Facebook, we are facebook.com/UKWired. But I'll say thanks to Duncan.
Thank you.
And thanks to Liv.
Thank you.
And I'll thank myself. You're welcome. And see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.